All right, welcome to part two of our NBA season preview. I'm Asani Fisher here with Aaron Jones, and let's start off with the Oklahoma City Thunder. 55 wins last year. Obviously, they lost Kevin Durant, so their win total this year is much less. It comes in at 43.5. They traded for Victor Oladipo, and it's pretty much going to be the Russell Westbrook show, huh?
Yes, Russell Westbrook will be a guy worth rostering in daily fantasy sports. I think that they have a weird team. They now have basically their two best players are their four best players are two centers and two point guards. I think that Steven Adams is one of the best players that nobody knows about. Basically, he would be on a list of like all underrated players, along with, you know, all the guys we mentioned in the East preview, you know, whoever. Millsap, Covington, George Hill, et cetera. I think he's really good. People start to get it after his performance in the playoffs. I think that he will get even better this season as he gets healthy. But, you know, Enes Kanter's pretty good too. I mean, I just to give you an idea of where I've gone on the Enes Kanter train, Enes Kanter, you know, went from being a horrible defender to merely a below average defender. And that made him go from total crap to like a reasonably valuable NBA player. And I talked to a friend of a friend that works around the NBA, and they basically said they wouldn't give Enes Kanter a minimum contract at one point in time. And now we're talking about a couple of years later, him being possibly worth his max. The guy just plays offense, and he can beat up on second units, and he goes to the glass like nobody else. And he just, you know, can sort of, you know, in the dog days of February, he can get you a few wins with just sheer offensive talent. So I would expect this to be a team that's middle of the pack in the West. I think 43.5 is a good over-under. I like Oladipo. I would look for him to break out with a little bit of an opportunity to sort of run the offense when Russ isn't. The only thing I think the injury to Campaign hurts them. They can just use guys that can shoot, and they can use guys that can play. Only thing I'd say is they have no wing depth. I think wing depth is going to be a major issue for them. Roberson can't shoot. If you could just meld Andre Roberson with Anthony Morrow and make them one NBA player, they would be an incredible – they would be like, you know, the 15th best player in the league or something like that. But you can't. So instead you've got one guy who's useless on D and one guy who's useless on O. I think that for all the excitement that'll be around like Russell Westbrook MVP candidate when they're like – if they get to be like 17 and 10, people might talk about that. They're just kind of a boring team that can't beat any of the good guys no matter what. Don't even give them a shot. They can't beat anybody good. But they're solid. They'll win a lot of games.
Their center situation is weird in that, like you said, you can't play both of them at the same time. So it's a waste in that regard. But as we saw last year in the playoffs, it really does allow them to play the matchups. One of Kanter or Adams usually works really well, no matter what strategy you're trying to run against various teams in the playoffs.
Yeah, the problem is when you're trying to – so the way that the NBA works is basically that you're always trying to fit all of the talent you can into your starting lineup or into your rotation. And so when you have so much overlap between players like Kanter and Adams and the inability – or I shouldn't say inability, the difficulty of them both sharing the floor – although Adams can sort of defend fours and Kanter can sort of shoot threes now, the inability to play them both together for more than like 5 or 10 minute stretches and in only the right matchups just makes it tough to shoehorn all of your talent onto the floor.
I'm going to put you on the spot. How high do you think Russell Westbrook's DraftKings – DraftKings usually has higher salaries than FanDuel, I believe, so I'll go with them. Question. How high does Westbrook's DraftKings price get this year?
I think that he'll touch 13K at some point in time. I think he has in the past with Durant out. I think he's gotten to like maybe 13.2. I could be wrong about that, but that sounds about right. I think he'll touch 13. That'll be my prediction.
All right, cool. All right, next team up, the Portland Trail Blazers. They won 44 games last year. They're projected at 45.5 this year. Last offseason, I know the Trailblazers were the darlings of the analytical community. Getting Aminu was a great pickup for them. This season, I have not been hearing those same rumblings whatsoever. I know they got Evan Turner, which has not been well-liked by most people I've talked to. Yeah, give me your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I just think that when you have Lillard and McCollum on the same team and their strength is shot creation and shot making, I don't think you need much shot creation. And I think that's about all Evan Turner provides is like average shot creation and average. He's just kind of a mediocre NBA player when he's got the ball in his hands and he's playing against second units. And he's useless at all other times. So, like, you know, McCollum and Dame are both incredibly useful off ball as guys that can catch and launch threes, guys that defenses don't ever leave. And he's not. He's useless off the ball. If he becomes a decent three-point shooter, I could see some value in him. I can't see $17 million a year worth of value, but I could see, like, you know, he does have NBA skills. And I think that he, you know, got sort of a bad rap for his first few destinations because he didn't have the right coaching. And in the right system, he's an NBA player, but he's like a seventh or eighth man and only in the right matchups. And, you know, he's a T-Rex. He's got short arms. So I didn't want that. I was unhappy they gave him so much money when they had such a promising young team. I think that giving him all that money is basically just another case of a team rushing the rebuild. We don't know the state of Festus Ezeli's knee. If he's healthy, he's quite an interesting centerpiece for them. And funny enough, I joked that had they just given Ezeli $17 million a year and Evan Turner $7 million a year, people would probably think they had a decent offseason. But somehow they got Ezeli on a two-year $7 million contract and paid Turner $17 million a year. And now people are just like, what a horrible offseason.
Let me ask you this. I know there are certain teams, namely the Spurs jump to mind, where we constantly give them the benefit of the doubt when they make moves like this. The Trailblazers seem to have a pretty sharp front office, sharp coaching staff. I know they've embraced like technology and done work with like iPads on the bench and stuff like that. Do you give them the benefit of the doubt with Evan Turner that maybe they do have some insight into a role? Because like you said, he does have some NBA skills. Do you give the Trailblazers the benefit of the doubt on stuff like this or not really?
No. You are trying to shoehorn all of your talent onto the floor in as many minutes as possible, and you just cannot play C.J. McCollum, Damian Lillard, and Evan Turner at the same time on either end, frankly. You just can't do it. So I know you can't do it. You just definitely can't. So I don't really – like I don't really have much else to say besides for the fact that if you play the three of them, you're going to need to ask if they can play with a second basketball, basically. So I don't see that. It's not an interesting team to me anymore. I think had they kind of kept the band together or maybe just signed someone better than Evan Turner, someone who didn't need the ball in his hands to play some minutes and also gambled on Ezeli, that was a good gamble. You know, he has knee problems, but if he misses 6 months and he comes back for the playoffs and he's healthy, he does something that they need, which is defend the rim and rebound. They need that. So, yeah, so I don't know. It's an interesting team because they've got sort of a log jam, but it's just another team similar to these guys in the East we talked about. They just kept their upside. They're not interesting to me anymore. They're dead to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess and it is frustrating when such bright situations, and in particular Damian Lillard, a guy who could take another step forward, and the guy, if Steph Curry didn't exist in this world, I think, you know, we all might appreciate Damian Lillard a little more because it's
definitely
he gets overshadowed by, you know, basically being Steph Light. But yeah, I can't disagree with you on the Evan Turner thing. It just doesn't make sense from a fit or value-wise, really. But otherwise, yeah, like I think you are pretty high on just McCollum and Lillard, like as, you know, trending forward, though, correct?
Definitely, and I'm very high on Mo Harkless and Aminu. I like them both. I just think that guys who are long and switchy and athletic and can get out in transition and can either kind of make a shot or are making strides towards being able to make a shot enough to be like, oh, that guy might be able to shoot eventually, they interest me. Long arms, terrors on defense, both can play power forward. Yeah, I like those guys. I think that you can't have enough wings in this league that can run and that can jump and that can guard multiple positions. So yeah, I'm high on them. I'm okay with their, you know, people say maybe McCollum and Lillard can't coexist because there's not a good enough defensive backcourt. I would figure it out. You know, I would try to figure it out by just surrounding them by defensive players that can shoot threes. But yeah, I'm high on a lot of guys in Portland. I'm just not high on Evan Turner.
Yeah, yeah. I also really do. I mean, look, culture does matter in basketball, particularly when you're talking about just like getting shots up after practice and stuff like that. It seems to me like both Lillard and McCollum are guys who just, they're guys you might come 3 hours after practice and they're still there, you know, doing a 3-point shooting drill or something like that over and over again. Yeah, it just kind of makes you want to root for them and see, you know, how their careers transpire. Let's move on to the Utah Jazz. 40 wins last year, 49 wins Vegas over-under this year. This is a team that hasn't proven it yet, but everyone seems to really like the direction their franchise is heading. Gordon Hayward, unfortunately, is going to start the year injured. But, yeah, what are your thoughts on the Jazz this year?
I mean, I jizz for the Jazz. I think that they are just an unbelievably good team. I mean, I would bet the over, and I would go as far as to say that the Utah Jazz will be the toughest out for the Golden State Warriors. I'm not saying they're going to win the second most games in the West. I'm certainly not saying they're going to beat the Warriors, but I would take the Jazz to take the Warriors to the most games in the playoffs, even though that might only be six and no one might take them more than like five. I still think that they're the toughest out for them. There's a small chance that I'm a year ahead of the Love, but I feel really good about them. I think that they're designed to be able to play defense. They've got guys who can switch. They've got really strong interior rebounding defense and even a little bit of post scoring with Favors. And I think those are the only areas you might suggest the Warriors have question marks or weaknesses, and these guys can do that. In addition, they just have really solid defenders all around at all positions, and they have an outrageous amount of depth. That and the fact that this is sort of their first rodeo when it comes to being a relatively new NBA team, I would bet the over here on 49. The depth is incredible. Quinn Snyder brings it every single night, and I think that just being able to bring in second-year Trey Lyles off the bench, an interesting big, Boris Diaw, whatever he's got left is an interesting big, Jeff Withey is a halfway decent backup center. I mean, the team just has options. They just kind of have options. Joe Johnson in the sixth man role or seventh man role or eighth man role or whatever he is. Alec Burks off the bench. He might be like a league average starting shooting guard or something. And then their backup point guard is probably going to be Exum, I guess. And, you know, I guess now or never in year three for Exum. Like, you know, he's obviously had the injury issues, but hopefully by now he can give them something. I mean, he's been at least encouraging as a defender and a spot-up shooter. So even if he can't dribble, he's been at least encouraging in those roles. And they have enough wing creation with Joe Johnson, Hayward, and Hood to do it. They're 10.5 deep, man. These guys are terrifying.
Yeah, I think like we were just saying about Portland, we were criticizing them and saying how, you know, it saddens us so much when teams with potential screw it up. Man, it was so nice to see the Jazz on the complete opposite end of the spectrum. Joe Johnson and George Hill, like you said, those are just perfect moves for what they needed.
And not only that, but they waited a year. I think that last year they could have rushed the rebuild a little, but they didn't. They were patient. They waited a year. They kind of knew Exum wasn't going to be ready to play point guard. But they didn't go out and spend a bunch of money at point guard. They knew it was going to be a position of weakness for them with Burke and Exum last year. But instead of being like, oh, we're going to fucking sign Jeremy Lin to too much money, or we're going to, you know, trade for, you know, whoever, Reggie Jackson or whatever, they didn't force it. They decided we'll wait, we'll be patient. And they were able to trade the 13th or 11th or whatever it was pick in the draft for George Hill. And what can be only considered a huge win by anybody who knows the league. So, and now, like I said, they're too deep at every position. I mean, they can withstand injuries.
Yeah, I agree. There's lots to love about them. We've hit on a lot of it. One question about them when I look at their team construction, and I think this is the big thing, can Gobert and Favors play together offensively? Can they make that work with the lack of spacing?
I think it's a fair question. But both can play full complements of minutes while only sharing the floor for about 12 minutes a game if they want. So if they decide that they kind of have to just – see, I've always thought that these positional overlap things were a little overrated, kind of like with the Mahimi and Gortat thing in Washington. People are like, oh, why are you signing a center to all that money, blah, blah, blah. I just think if you dedicate 30 minutes a game to each of them, and Favors has had back spasm problems. I'm not even sure he's practicing yet. He's got some injury issues. And you dedicate 30 to 33 minutes a game or whatever to Gobert, then you really only have to overlap him for a dozen minutes or so. And if that's the case, start him for the first 6 minutes a game and then platoon him after that and then bring him back in the right matchups, or don't play him together in the right matchups. I personally think I think Favors has learned to stretch his jump shot out just enough to make it palatable, because that is a incredible defensive front court. So I would say that the defense more than makes up for the question marks on offense.
Okay. I agree with that. I do think it caps their upside to feel like to win a title, you need your best players on the floor together, you know?
And I mean, if that becomes the case and that's just like a clear thing, that's going to be a problem. And Trey Lyles becomes a guy that can stretch the floor, because people love Trey Lyles. Speaking of how good that draft class was last year, if that's the case, and Trey Lyles looks like the future at power forward and he can start, both of them have tremendous trade value. Figure out which one you want to trade and trade one of them.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. Let's move on to the Denver Nuggets. 33 wins last year, 37 wins is their Vegas over under this year. Interesting young bunch. Moutier kind of a lot of question marks at point guard, but man, that front court of Nurkic and Jokic seems like it could be something to reckon with.
Yes, I'm not sure if that's the team that you – I'm not sure if those are the guys you want playing together or not, but both are super interesting young bigs. People have forgotten about Nurkic. He was very highly regarded in the draft by smart people. I mean, there are people that didn't know about him basically, but – by like our friend Dean, very, very highly regarded by smart people. He slipped to 20th or something like that, or 21st or something. And I think he was a good pick there. Real nice rookie season. Then Jokic came on last year. Nurkic was never quite right. I think he had like gained some weight. His knee problems kind of kept recurring, but supposedly he's healthy now. So I think, you know, you're looking at two very interesting young center prospects. Jokic shoots, Jokic passes. Jokic is an incredible NBA player. Nurkic more like, you know, he can pass a little too, but he's more of a bruiser, a kind of a rim protector. Supposedly he's lost 30 pounds in the offseason or whatever, and he's slimmed down, just like Fat Eddie Lacy slimmed down, right? Like, who knows? But if these guys can play a little bit together, and again, just platoon them like we talked about with Favors and Gobert, really an interesting center front court. I'm buying Nugget stock. This is the team I'm all in on. You know, the over isn't as low as I would like it to say pound the over. I love them though. Great shooting guard rotation. Gary Harris is solid. Will Barton is a good spark off the bench. They've got a rookie who probably won't be any good or play any time this year, but is decent. I think they did good in the draft this year. I like Gallo as like a secondary shot creator and a guy that can space the floor. I like Fareed if he can find the right role. I'm not sure if he can in this modern NBA. And I think Wilson Chandler, you should look at as like a free agent acquisition. The guy hasn't played all – he didn't play all last year. So, you know, if you look at him as like a solid, slightly below average league average starting wing, then you've got a team that's got a little bit of depth. I didn't like Moutier coming into the draft, and then he had a horrible rookie season, and now I like him. So go figure. I think he's just shown just enough as far as creation and his ability. He kind of has a nice cadence to him, if that makes sense. He's able to kind of use his body and make the right Euro steps and change direction and finish around the rim. The shot doesn't look great, but it's improving. So I like him. I think buy Nugget stock all over the place. Jokic is unbelievable. He's the best player you don't know about. He's probably already a top 25 NBA player. And if he's not, he will be 2 years from now.
Yeah, I don't disagree with anything you said specifically, but I'm just not quite as high in quite a few spots, I guess I would say, on them. I grew up, but my favorite team when I first got into basketball were those Sacramento Kings with Vlade Divac and Chris Webber. And so I like some good front court passing. And like you were saying, Jokic has a few. Go on YouTube and look up Jokic assists from last year. He has a few, like, absolutely assists that would be like jaw droppers from a point guard, and you're watching a 7-footer do it. They can run lineups with Gallo at the four and him at the five, and their front court passing is just unbelievable. It's really, really fun basketball to watch.
They'll have some defensive question marks all year, but I would say it's going to be a fun team. Mike Malone likes defense, and he probably likes to slow it down more than I would like. So I'm not going to say they're going to be like an unbelievable team to target for DFS, because they just have a ton of depth on offense. And defensively, even though they should be soft defensively and, like, you know, bigs should mess them up as they have in years past, Malone just likes to slow it down. He likes to be paced down. So I'd be a little skeptical of playing too many DFS guys against them for that reason.
Gotcha. All right, moving on. We have the Minnesota Timberwolves. Probably the most, if I had this, other than the Warriors, the most interesting team this year, at least for me. 29 wins last year, 40.5 over-under this year. Karl Anthony Towns, will he take the leap into legit superstar? Has he already last year, perhaps? This is going to be fun to watch this year.
And Tibbs, right? I mean, Tibbs is in there trying to make him seem like a legitimate defensive bunch. It's just a good team. How good, I don't know. The over-under is high, man. I mean, 40.5 wins. Vegas nearly thinks they're going to make the playoffs, or maybe they just, you know, they think Tibbs is worth that many. I'm not sure. They're good, though. They're real good. I would think that they're a wing player short. I don't think Wiggins is ready to guard the opposing team's best wing. I also don't think that LaVine is ready to do that. I like everyone on their roster. Rubio is better than everybody thinks. I didn't love the Chris Dunn pick, nor do I think that he's like their point guard of the future. But as like sort of this weird sixth man that can come in and eventually maybe be like a defensive presence, I guess he could be good. I didn't really understand that pick or the fact that everybody in the top half of the lottery was trying to trade for Chris Dunn. Anyways, I didn't really get that. But interesting young team. I like him at all positions. Actually, you mentioned this, and I didn't consider it until now. Because of their signing of Cole Aldrich in the offseason, which was a strong signing in my opinion, and them having Gorgui Jang on the roster, Tibbs likes to play with two bigs. So I think that he thinks that Towns is going to play power forward this year, which is fine because Towns can shoot, etc. I kind of want him to be my center. That's an interesting Paul Millsap trade destination. I mean, if they wanted to expedite the timeline, they could get good fast. Man, they could roll Rubio, LaVine, Wiggins, Millsap, Towns. That would be a fascinating team. A year away for sure, I think, but a good young team that'll beat a bunch of teams and maybe sneak into the 8 seed.
I agree with you on Rubio. Granted, I've been a fan of his since he entered the league, but I just think he has clear NBA skills that can, you know, help a team in certain ways and that you can get past the shooting inadequacies there. Zach LaVine, for me, a year ago, he was a guy I thought was super overrated. Yeah, I was like, yeah, he can dunk and do a bunch of flashy things, but he's never going to be productive as an NBA player. He certainly seemed to prove me wrong last year. I think his development will be interesting. And I still have no clue what to make of Wiggins.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't argue. Like, he has the upside to do crazy things. You watch him a few plays, there's like a popular highlight of him where he locks down James Harden on defense, runs the floor, and then catches an alley-oop or something. He seems to be able to do things like that. He seems to have the potential to be an elite 3-and-D guy. If you put that next to Towns, they should win championships. But I just don't know if he's actually going to turn into that.
You know, he may never get it. He doesn't have the girth right now to guard some of the bigger wings in the league, and he may never get it. And he might not have the possession-to-possession intensity, although if anyone can bring it out of him, it's probably Tibbs. So I would say I don't love him. Enough questions about, like, his motor. And the thing I don't love about him the most is the dude just jacks too many long twos. It tilts the hell out of me. He just thinks that, like, dribble, you know, spin move, fadeaway is a good possession. As much as I love Tibbs, and everybody should love Tibbs, and he had a good offseason too, really, when I think about it, in the front office, I don't know. His offense has had some criticisms of being a little stale. I don't know that it'll get less stale and less ISO-y with Tibbs at the helm, which is too bad because LaVine and Wiggins desperately need a ball-moving guru to help them improve on the offensive end.
Right. It seems, especially when you're dealing with guys like Rubio and Towns, who are such great passers, you shouldn't have like these ISO possessions whatsoever. You should have some type of continual motion offense or something. Let's move on to the Pacific Division and the Golden State Warriors. 73 wins last year. I have it at 66.5, what we have written down. I think that opened at 68.5 and then moved down or something. I know there's been lots of action on it. From generally what I've heard is that Vegas has a very strong position on the under. Everyone's betting the Warriors over this year, which, you know, seems to make sense. Like, my first impression is, oh, yeah, that seems like they're going to easily break 67 wins on the year. Do you see any growing pains with Durant, or is he just going to be pretty seamlessly integrated into that offense?
I mean, I think that Durant just has too much ego, and these guys are going to be terrible.
Yeah, all right.
No, these guys are going to be the best team of all time by so far. It's not even funny. It isn't even close. It's hilarious how people want to compare it to like the Nash and Dwight thing when they came to LA, or they want to compare it to like LeBron and Wade and Bosh, where you already kind of had positional overlap and some question marks. This team was the best team of all time last year. And what they did, they were literally the best team of all time. They won 73 games. And what they did was they removed their weakest position, a league slightly below average starting forward, and they added the best player in the league instead of him. And now they have become literally the best thing that basketball has ever seen. It isn't even close. They're incomparable to any – is uncomparable? I'm not sure. They're not comparable to other super teams. This team is going to beat anybody they want by any amount of points they want immediately. Now, of course, they probably won't want to do that because Kerr has mentioned playing all the young guys. He's mentioned that they want to rest a lot. He's also mentioned that they want to they don't want to be close to the wins record because they don't like the emotional toll it took on them next year. So they're not going to probably win 74, although honest to God, they might be on pace to win 74 while trying actively not to do it. Like, even if they sabotage a bunch of center minutes with Anderson Varejao, who's got nothing left, they might still win 74 games. This is the best basketball creation that has ever been put together. They do all of the things perfectly, and at any moment, any of the three primary guys can launch a three from 35 feet and have it be a perfectly good shot. It is a fucking terrifying team. Everyone else should quit life. There is no reason to play the games. If anyone on this team gets injured, they're the favorites to win the NBA title, and it's not even close. If anyone on the team gets injured, that includes Steph Curry or Kevin Durant, they are still the prohibitive favorites. It is a joke how good this team is. It is totally absurd. Bye, bye, bye. I doubt if they're trying, no one takes them to six games in the playoffs except the Jazz. But this team is unreal. You can't say enough good things. You can talk about the Draymond Green drama, which there was an Ethan Sherwood Strauss piece that got released today about how he's out of control and he parties too much and he's sending dick pics all the time and stuff. And there was also a piece about KD where he had some drama about the whole Oklahoma City leaving thing and how he said things about how he wanted to play with guys that he liked, which, by the way, if you asked me about the decision, that's what I would say. I've played a ton of basketball, and I know that playing with Russell Westbrook would be frustrating as hell. I hate the guys in the gym who dribble, 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 shoot, dribble, 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 shoot, and the third possession down, they're like, it's not my turn, it's your turn. And they pass the ball to you, and they're like, you'd go do it. That isn't how basketball is supposed to work. There has to be attention on offense by multiple players. There has to be driving and kicking and engagement and screening. And it doesn't have to be flex cuts all day, but you've got to have some sort of motion and some sort of engagement to keep people into the game. This team will have that with the best individual talent. They are a juggernaut. Shut it down.
All right. I agree that for sure, that five-man lineup they can run out.
You can't play devil's advocate. You're wasting your time.
Devil's advocate. Steph, Clay, and Durant all lose a little bit when you allow teams to be more physical and bump cutters. The playoff rules hurt this team a little bit. Last year they were, like you said, the greatest team of all time. in the regular season. In the playoffs, the Oklahoma City Thunder took them to 7 games. So it wasn't just the flukish series against the Cavs. Is there something to that? Could they struggle in the playoffs? Could, when LeBron James is trying his hardest and actually, you know, giving 100% LeBron and he's in God mode, and you actually have Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love, you have another year of Kevin Love, you know, getting more integrated in that offense. That's the devil's advocate argument. Anything there I said convince you whatsoever, or is it still just full steam ahead?
Yes, if Durant gets cloned and also plays for the Thunder this year, they might have a shot.
All righty. So you're taking over 66.5, it sounds like.
No, I don't have any opinion on the over or under. I don't think they're going to try very hard during the year. I just think they're an unbeatable team when they want to be.
Okay, well, I'm trying to – you obviously seem very pro-Warriors here. You like them. You would bet on them in the playoffs, it sounds like, or you seem to like
I would bet on them in the playoffs. I think they're probably – I think they're minus 125 right now to win it all. I might think they're a tad bit better than that. They might be closer to like 60%. I mean, just so much stuff can happen in all the different rounds of the playoffs. If the Clippers, for instance, would pose a threat, if you just cloned Jay Crowder and put him on the Clippers, they would pose a threat. Otherwise, they don't. And Redick has always had trouble guarding Clay. I don't see anybody that poses a threat, except if one or more of their players is injured, and if LeBron God modes again, they could beat them. I mean, just think about it like this. Harrison Barnes, his sphincter was so tight in the playoffs that he was airballing threes. Kevin Durant will not be airballing threes in the same situation. I promise you that.
Here's a hot take. Biggest threat to the Warriors winning the title this year? The Celtics, after they've traded for DeMarcus Cousins.
That's a totally reasonable take. Honestly, if there's one team that, or one, if there's a thing that could bother the Warriors, it's interior play. It's specifically like a bruiser that just like, you know, they're just a ridiculous juggernaut bruiser, because all they've got down there is Zaza, David West, and some rookies.
And wings that can defend them, which so Boston would then have the perfect combo.
I mean, you can't do better than Marcus Smart and Avery Bradley as a defensive backcourt, that's for sure. Now, Boston would have the problem of trying to hide Isaiah Thomas, but he would probably have to play when Steph is out of the game, and then you could maybe hide him on or you could maybe have him guard Steph some of the time, just enough to think that his offense makes up for it. But no, it is correct that perimeterly, Smart, Crowder, Bradley are the perfect team to defend the Warriors. That is absolutely correct.
Right. All right, so another little offshoot here. Given all that you've said about the Warriors in these last few minutes, if LeBron does it again, if he gets to the finals and beats them, does that push him past MJ, like is the greatest of all time?
I'm not great at those conversations. I mean, probably yes. If they're healthy and LeBron just like does what he did last year, like by himself, his games 5, 6, and 7 last year were like a joke how good they were. People will maybe never appreciate it. It might have just been like the best 3-game stretch by any NBA player ever. He was unbelievable. Then yes, maybe / probably, but I'm not good at this, like rank them, and I don't care about that stuff. You know, like he's still going to have like 5 years left of his career. So like how he transitions into like, you know, a Karl Malone type or whatever, like at age like 36 or whatever, will be more telling almost than like how many he wins throughout his prime.
Gotcha.
Because he'll have a chance to be a second cog in a lot of good teams.
I guess I bring that up specifically because I've heard a lot of people complain that they don't like this move. They don't like the thought of, you know, a top player in the league joining an already great team. And for me, I think it's awesome because it gives LeBron James the narrative that most people care about, the overarching, you know, the main storyline is the greatest player of all time. You know, the chase for that, the LeBron versus MJ versus Steph's in the conversation. And this gives LeBron a platform to like do something that would actually put him, you know, in that range. And for me, that's like the storyline I'm most interested to see. Like, can LeBron be you know, Superman again?
Yep. And those two teams are almost certainly going to be in the finals again. So we'll get to see it.
Yeah. All right. Past the Golden State Warriors, we have the Los Angeles Clippers. You just touched on them a second ago. They won 53 games last year. 53 and a half is their win total this year. Kind of have pretty much the same team, right?
Yeah, very similar. They paid too much money to bring back some of their core. They let Jeff Green walk and kind of replaced him with who did they sign on the wing? Their min signings were like Brandon Bass and Raymond Felton, who were both really solid min signings. They signed Mo Spates, who should be able to space the floor a little bit around like Blake Griffin and Chris Paul pick and roll on a second unit. Or I guess it might be like an Austin Rivers, Blake Griffin pick and roll on the second unit. I think they're good, just like a really good team. J.J. Redick had unsustainably good shooting last year, but he's a great NBA player. You could see step backs from any of their guys. All of their big four, Blake could be just like the quad injury and he's not the same. DJ, it could just be that he's past his athletic prime, even though he's still in his late 20s. Sometimes guys that are that athletic peak at like 22 athletically. So he could be a little past his prime. Chris Paul, people have been waiting to drop off a cliff for years. He never does it. And JJ shot unsustainably good and has had some injury problems. So any of those guys could take like a 15% step back and really hurt them. But the team is just a great regular season team. Night in, night out, they're good. What's going to probably happen is they might get competitive with the Spurs for the 2 seed and just really decide that home court advantage matters there. But I don't think they've really got a shot at it. They're probably going to be the 3 seed, and them and the Spurs will duke it out in the second round of the playoffs next year, and they'll probably lose. But they do match up well with the Spurs. And then they'll probably blow it up in some strange way in the offseason because both Blake and CP3 are free agents.
I remember last year when Blake Griffin was out, a bit of the narrative became people were looking at how little drop-off there seemed to be without Blake Griffin. And people were speculating that perhaps Blake Griffin and Chris Paul are superfluous, that like some of what Blake brings to the table is kind of wasted when you just want to put the ball into Chris Paul's hands all the time. What are your thoughts on that? And do you think that perhaps they should look to make a move? Like if they trade Blake Griffin, could they have like a better roster construction or a better fit with Chris Paul?
I mean, they're superfluous in the sense that they're superfluous in the same way that any two good number one and number two options are superfluous.
Right. Let me put it this way. I know for a fact that like we think Blake Griffin's better than Ryan Anderson. But would they really be that much worse with Ryan Anderson?
I mean, yes, because Ryan Anderson couldn't guard me. But I would say that in theory, there are other guys that might be below him on the totem pole. Like, for instance, there's a decent chance they're better with Paul Millsap. And I think that universally, people would say Blake's a better player. I would agree Blake's a better player. But in most situations, Blake would be a better player. Like, if you need a guy to soak up some offense, blah, 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 blah. It's feasible that they have enough offense with Chris Paul running pick and roll, Austin Rivers on the second unit, et cetera, and J.J. Redick coming off screens to mitigate that and that they really just need the defense and a little bit more floor spacing. Blake's going to try to shoot threes this year, which should help them. The truth is I just don't know. I thought last year a pretty good fake trade was Melo for Blake Griffin because Melo is like a bang, bang, 40% on 8 attempts a game, 3-point shooter. And even though like technically he should be doing less ISOing, but you might not be able to kick it out of him. If Melo is your four, you can't ask for a better 3-point shooter. He can shoot threes. And so if that's what you're looking for,
I love that fit.
Exactly. And whatever Melo's front court limitations would be as a power forward, not ever wanting to guard the other team's best big man, lack of rebounding, lack of rim protection, lack of trying on defense. DeAndre just erases them all with his giant fucking hands and jumping ability and whatever. So that's an interesting fit. And also it lines up with the timelines more, right? Because Blake's a little younger, so him and Kristaps could take their time together and, you know, wait a year or two to be good. And Chris Paul and Melo are both getting up there in age. So that'd been an interesting one.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's go on to the Sacramento Kings. 33 wins last year, 34 wins projected for this season. DeMarcus Cousins, he's talented. He's appears to be being wasted, and he's a big head case at times. That's pretty much the thoughts on him. What do you think about the situation?
The Kings are just a dumpster fire. I mean, they've just done so many. It's tough for me to give a shit about them because they've made so many bad moves over the years, like giving Garrett Temple this contract in the offseason, letting Isaiah Thomas go. I mean, there's just so many random things that they've done that have been negative EV, basically, that it's difficult for me to care about the Kings at all. So I just kind of write them off as a crappy organization. The one thing I would say about them is that they have a few decent wings that are, and I don't love Rudy Gay, but I think that he wants out of Sacramento. He could be a target for the Clippers. I could see the Clippers, and again, I don't love his fit there, but in theory, he can do a little bit of floor spacing. So if he would give up the iso ball tendencies, and if CP3 could just shake him and be like, bro, use all of your energy on defense and stand in the corners and shoot threes, that's all we need you for, then I think he could be a decent fit there. Because he does have the size and the length, but really he just winds up being a cancer to all the teams he's on. So wherever he gets traded, the team will probably be worse with him. I love Omri Caspi, one of the most underrated players in the league for sure. I think Ben McLemore has started to show some flashes. You might see a little bit of it. I mean, they've also been kind of trying to trade him. I think his agent's been trying to get him traded too because the team is such a wreck. So the team is like an interesting collection of talent. Willie Cauley-Stein has been kind of bad, but he's an interesting young player to me. They're an interesting collection of talent, but it's just a bunch of crappy players around DeMarcus Cousins. So I guess we'll see if Jaeger can get anything out of him because he's a pretty talented coach. But otherwise, I would expect them to be a good team to both target and to play in daily fantasy sports and just a crappy team in real life.
Yeah, I would agree with most of that. I think the only really interesting piece in the roster I have for this season is, like you mentioned, Willie Cauley-Stein. I think bigs who can both like be an interior defensive presence and get out there and move their feet and like and switch at times are just really valuable. It'd be cool to see how he develops. As far as our team, yeah, like you said, I don't really care. I think it's a lot more interesting to think about DeMarcus Cousins as a potential trade possibility. This is a guy who's incredibly talented, and we've talked before about how winning championships is all about landing a superstar. So let's pretend you're a team out there who could potentially trade for DeMarcus Cousins. He is a superstar. He brings that upside. He also doesn't seem to try at times, where there are some times he is outright just like quit on a play. Do you bring a guy like that in? Do you take a chance? Do you have to take risks like that in order to win championships or just land a superstar at times?
I mean, I would say no. From what I hear about his actual demeanor and his behavior off the court and just general berating of teammates at random times, I would say I would not trade for him. Now, you know, there are going to be lines in the sand here, right? So like, I'm not going to pay them what they think he's worth. If I'm the Celtics and they say, I want two picks and a player, I tell them, you know, here's where you can shove it. But if I'm the Celtics and they say, oh, we just want like your late two first rounders and, you know, some mid first rounder from past years, like RJ Hunter or something like that, and Terry Rozier, then I say, well, obviously I'm going to gamble. But as far as like giving up real assets for him, I just wouldn't do it. You know, I mean, I think that people oversell locker room stuff. And I think that because when teams are winning, locker room stuff gets fixed. I also think they oversell chemistry stuff and whatever, but it's just true. It is just true that things snowball and compound. So what I mean by that is if DeMarcus Cousins is telling you suck after every third play, and if you go to practice and DeMarcus Cousins is like, nah, man, we ain't running that or whatever, and he's just not listening to the coach or whatever, it's so difficult to be a professional and do your job. So for me, that's why I wouldn't trade for him, because I think that the best player needs to be a bit of a leader. Can Brad Stevens, Al Horford, Marcus Smart, Jay Crowder, Isaiah Thomas, Avery Bradley, and guys that we've never heard anything bad about galvanize him? Yes, maybe. Like, that would be my answer to that. But, you know, would I bring him into an organization like the Suns with young and impressionable players? I would not.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I tend to look at his upside. Like we were saying earlier, he's the one, like him on the Celtics is like the one threat we can imagine to the Warriors, and tend to think it's worth it. But yeah, I think it's an interesting question on both sides. Let's move on to our next team, the Phoenix Suns. You just mentioned them. 23 wins last year, 30 on the dot is their Vegas over-under this year. An exciting or an interesting young mix of talent, I guess. Booker really surprised last year. We talked about how great that draft class is. He certainly appears to be a stud, although he was terrible on defense, I think. Yeah, give me some thoughts on the Suns.
This is interesting. I was thinking about that. I wanted to bet the over on them. I thought that they might, with some health, they might be a little bit better than people think. Because last year they just weren't healthy all year. Bledsoe left early, et cetera, et cetera. And Booker is better. And Dudley was a solid free agent signing. And I just thought, maybe these guys will be a little bit better than we think. But two things bother me. One, Earl Watson's just not very smart, I don't think. He's just not a very good NBA coach. He just doesn't really get it. Unless he was like tanking intentionally at the end of last season. His lineup rotations, his end of game decisions, he seems to be more of a motivator and a pep talk guy and not really very good at the X's and O's. I don't know if he's got like some smart assistants there or something that I'm not sure about, but he seems to be pretty bad as an NBA coach. And the second thing that I think about when I think of them is, man, they're young. I mean, Booker's still a little bit away. TJ Warren, totally unproven, missed a lot of last year developmentally with injury. And then they'd have two interesting young power forwards in Dragan Bender and Marquise Chris, who I like both of them, but God, those guys are 19. They're going to be below replacement level when they do play. So this is going to be just another really learning season for them. And Alex Len has never shown anything all that impressive, although I do think that people shouldn't give up on him just yet. And Tyson Chandler is clearly well over the hill. So if you look at their big man rotation, it is bad, B-A-D bad. I mean, at the very best, Len is serviceable, and Tyson Chandler has a renaissance to become like a league average starting center, and there is nothing interesting at power forward. It is just bad.
Yeah, this is a team, I think we hit on this when we talked about the Utah Jazz, and you were saying how happy you were that they didn't make a move too early. I've heard some rumblings about the Suns going after LaMarcus Aldridge if he becomes on the trade market. I don't, like you said, they have too many pieces that are just too young. I hope they don't make some drastic move and really try to go for it. I hope they just kind of let it play out and see which pieces emerge as a part of their future, because we really don't know at this point.
That's what teams should do. Unfortunately, their owner has a history of not doing that. He's an impatient.
Yeah, yeah. All right, next team is the Los Angeles Lakers. 17 wins last year, 24.5 wins this year. There's some hope. There's Kobe's out of there. We got D'Angelo Russell. Looks like, you know, a legit piece. Julius Randle flashes some potential at times. I don't think you're super high on him, but there's actually some hope in Lakerland. Things are looking promising for once, huh?
Yes, I'm a Luke Walton fan. I think that he'll probably do a pretty good job. And I also like D'Angelo Russell, as you said, and I like Jordan Clarkson as a secret guy that people aren't really talking about. I think that they signed him to a pretty good deal. I don't love Julius Randle, and I don't love that they spent a ton of money in this offseason signing random guys who aren't any good. They just spent a ton of money signing Luol Deng and Timofey Mozgov when they didn't have to. So I think that they also kind of are rushing it. But these teams all have strange – they all have strange motivations, right? So, like, in the Lakers front office, if they don't win a certain amount of games or look like they're threatening to make the playoffs, there's going to be a bunch of people fired. Like, one of the bus sons or whatever said, oh, you can fire me if, like, we don't, you know, look good this year. So what are you going to do? You're going to go out and take a team that's way too young and punt a bunch of cap space on league average starters and hope that they take a leap. So in that sense, I think the Lakers have fucked up. But, yeah, they'll be better this year. They'll be competitive under Walton, and I think their over-under is actually pretty fair.
You mentioned you like Clarkson and Russell. How do you see them playing together? Can they coexist? Can one of them be a shooting guard? Or would you want to stagger them, have Clarkson come up?
The thing is that you can never have too much talent, right? So I think that I would probably play Clarkson off the bench as like a combo guard, shooting guard and point guard. He can play all of the backup point guard minutes and some shooting guard minutes with D'Angelo Russell. That's his ultimate role. Really, he's a good guy for that role, I think. Just to kind of, you know, getting better on defense, can shoot enough, can defend backup twos, but not necessarily starting twos. So, yeah, in that sense, I like him. So that's his future role, but they don't really have a starting shooting guard. What I would have done if I was the Lakers, they have Brandon Ingram, who shouldn't be any good this year, but should be good eventually. I wouldn't have given anybody any free agency money this year. I would have retained Clarkson. I would have gotten one more. I would have tried to keep my top three protected pick by just tanking really hard for one more season and making sure to be in the top three, which is easy because everyone else is trying to win this year. In case you, that's the interesting thing. The backlash of tanking has every single team except the Nets, who just can't help it because they can't win. And the 76ers are going to be even trying to win this year. So every single team is trying to win except the Nets, who don't have their pick. So who cares? So when everybody zigs, you got to zag, right? So I kind of expect that some team will emerge and start tanking with a strong draft class coming up. But man, adding one more top three pick to Clarkson, Ingram, D'Angelo Russell, and having maximum cap space next summer to throw at anybody, right? I mean, there's going to be a pretty good – I think even Paul George is a free agent next summer. To throw at literally anybody is super interesting to me. And what they did instead was punt on their cap space for two below-average starting players.
Right, and they're the Lakers, so you'd think if anyone could use that cap space, it's a team that, you know, is always number one on every free agent's destination list. We don't know how much pressure there is to win now in a market like Los Angeles. That could be the one thing we just don't
know. We do know. We know. There's infinite pressure. There's as much pressure as you can imagine. And so what I'm saying is that it would take a stupid person to think that the moves that they made make them more likely to win more than like three or four more games. And they make them more likely to win way less games 2 or 3 years from now. Like much less likely to win games because you will have used your cap space inefficiently. What they should have just like, can you imagine? They could have signed Russell Westbrook next summer. He's from LA, right? So like you can just wait for Russell Westbrook to come back to LA and you can save your cap space. And D'Angelo's a good enough shooter and Russell's big enough to guard twos. You could run a three guard lineup of Clarkson as your backup guard, playing either position, and D'Angelo and Russell Westbrook starting, and Ingram as a floor-spacing shooter that guards the other team's wing threat or whatever. You can sign some other defensive big or whatever you want to do. They could have signed Biombo. They could have done a million different things that would have made sense, and instead they made bad moves. I agree with you. There's tons of pressure for them to win, but it would take a stupid person to think that the moves this offseason would make them win, basically. It would just take a dumb person.
That's fair, because if anything, just like you said, just sign Biombo. Sign a guy who's at least young and has some potential to contribute in a few years when you want to be good, you know?
Yep.
All right, next team. We have San Antonio Spurs. 67 wins last year. Wow, they won 67? I guess with the Warriors being – yeah.
They were Warriors, a top five team of all time. They were insane.
It's just easy to forget, I guess, is what I'm saying. Yeah, 58.5 this year. They lose Tim Duncan. LaMarcus Aldridge is apparently unhappy. Other than that, I guess it's the same old Spurs as usual. Or I guess you got to mention Ginobili and Parker getting up there in age as well. They could drop off at any time. So I guess a few more questions about the Spurs this year than normal.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't love the Pau Gasol signing, but I get why they did it. I think it'll work out better than people think in the regular season. I think Gasol still has some skills. And
he's still pretty good, right? Like, a lot of people treat him like he's over the hill.
No. Gasol is not good. Well, Gasol is not good because he can't grab – the team's rebounding numbers with Gasol on the floor have always been terrible. Or they have been the last, like, 4 years or whatever since he left the Lakers, basically. So the teams can't rebound when he's on the floor, which is a problem. And also teams can't defend the basket when he's on the floor. He's not mobile enough to be, like, a modern center. That said –
why did I think there were some like secret numbers that thought he wasn't bad defensively? Am I making that up?
I think you might be making that up. Or it could be that he does deter shots when he's at the rim, but that he doesn't deter them with a high enough frequency.
That's probably it. Like, it could be that when he's actually standing, like, for instance, he does well in international competition because there's no defensive 3 seconds. And so he just camps out in the lane and stands up, and he's like 7-1 or whatever. So he can, you know, do a good job there. But I happen to think that a perimeter of Danny Green, Kawhi Leonard, and LaMarcus Aldridge, or like a forward rotation of that, is good enough to make up for his defensive woes. Pop's teams will just always be good defensively. So I happen to think that they could use a little bit of shot creation with him on offense, and he is still a good hub from the high post. I happen to think they could do a pretty good job there. But again, I just don't really like him. In this NBA where all of the good teams have all of this crazy switchiness and athleticism and ability to run the floor and all this stuff, like, what is the long con for a team with Pau Gasol at center? Like, what's the upside, right? I mean, you can't even defend a Clint Capella and James Harden pick and roll, right? Like, he just can't defend it. He can't guard. Like, he can't. Who's he on the? If these guys play in the first round in like a 3-6 series or something like that, and it's Spurs Rockets, I mean, I think the Spurs ultimately beat them. But you just see Powell get played off the court because Harden is just too good, and he puts him in a blender every single time. Powell can't move his feet enough. If Powell can move his feet, it's for like the first pick and roll. And then he's like, oh, the second one, he's like, ah, all right, I can't get out there anymore. I'm 36 or whatever, you know? So anyways, I think that the upside for the Spurs in the playoffs is capped for that reason. Although I don't know if they had better options. There weren't that many guys getting decent deals. I don't know what you're supposed to do. Give that $15 million a year to Marvin Williams, maybe? I'm not sure. But I think that in the regular season, they'll be really good again. I expect them – I would probably bet the over on 58.5, to be honest. I expect them to be really good regular season team again.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, I don't disagree with anything you said about Powell, but it's just like Duncan was also similarly limited in the playoffs last year, and it's like, yeah, there weren't like a lot of better options, I guess. Let's move on to the next team. We have the Dallas Mavericks. 42 wins last year, 38.5 Vegas over-under this year. This is a team that seems like they are on the downswing. They're a team that when I, you know, want to pencil in the Timberwolves and you know, a few other new teams in the playoffs, they're a team I want to say are one of the ones that drop out. But Carlisle is a damn good coach, and Dirk is still there, and it seems like I said this last year about them. I don't remember, you know, writing anything down, but if I would, I can very clearly remember thinking this last year, and they proved me wrong.
They did make a few nice moves. They made one nice move on the margin this year, as they signed Seth Curry to a contract. I liked that move. I think Seth is secretly a pretty good player. I mean, defensively, he has his limitations, but I think offensively, Seth is like a pretty reasonable player. So I like him. I don't mind some of their other moves. I don't love the Harrison Barnes move. I think that he's whatever and probably will never be worth a max, but whatever, he's a league average wing player, a league slightly below average wing player. He's young at least, and he can shoot a little bit, and he tries on defense. So what are you going to do? I love Justin Anderson. He's a guy that both of us liked, and I think I had him like, you know, I think I might have had him like 10th or 11th on my big board or something like that. And then he went like 21st to the Mavs last year. And with all of the insane publicity that all of these other players have gotten, it's gotten lost in the shuffle that towards the end of the season, he came on and had a pretty good rookie year. In the playoffs, he looked like their only choice for the athleticism they needed to have on the court. So I would look for him to have a breakout year one of these years. I really like sort of that trio of athletic wings, Stanley Johnson, Justice Winslow, and Justin Anderson. I think our three really strong players will be looking back on as like, you know, the next generation of good wings. I mean, my comment on them is they're going to win a lot of regular season games because Carlisle's a warlock. And that's really all I have. Yeah, I mean, like you said, is this the year Dirk falls off? I mean, age gets the best of everybody eventually, and Dirk could never guard anybody to start with. So who knows? Could be.
Yeah, it seems like them or Memphis is the teams that, you know, people are on.
Memphis? You mean the team that's next?
Yes, the team that's next. Memphis, also 42 wins last year, 42.5 this year. Had so many injury problems last year that they're really tough to evaluate. For the sake of argument, let's assume they're healthy. Let's assume they have at least above average health for what's expected for this next season. What do you think of that?
It's tough to say that because Chandler Parsons is not healthy right now. So it's tough to just like imagine a world where he is, because he's not even going to start the season. If they're healthy, I like the Parsons sign either way. It's a reasonable gamble because he fits well with what they're trying to do. But they need like a little more punch on offense. Supposedly Marc Gasol is skinny Marc Gasol again. That'll be great if true. He's a dynamic player, the 10th or 15th best player in the league. They're supposed to move Zebo to a bench role. Like it. Good idea. Supposedly Fizdale is going to be a pretty good coach. It'd be tough to upgrade on Jaeger, but everybody seems to like him. A lot of guys in their prime. It's a fine team. You know, it's just kind of a fine team. It's not interesting. They're just a fine team. And I think that they'll probably make the playoffs and be a low seed. If Chandler Parsons doesn't play at all this season, they could obviously, you know, win 30 something games, but they'll probably just win 40 and be 500 and be the seventh seed.
I actually wasn't even aware of the coaching change. I heard who's this new guy?
Yeah, they brought in Fizdale. You would recognize him. He was like Spo's most recognizable assistant. You always saw him on the bench. He was always like yelling at shooters. And, you know, he's a guy. He's a guy that's around. He's been around the league as supposedly a good developmental coach and a good personable guy. And Spo's a good coach. So my assumption is that he'll be good.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on. One thing I wanted to mention, I forgot to, when we were talking about the Mavericks. I agree with you completely on Harrison Barnes. I feel like, basically, if you couldn't succeed with the Warriors, you're not going to look better in another situation. And he just looked incredibly average for what amazing shots he was getting in that Warriors offense. I get it. I get that his physical gifts make you think he has upside, but his level of production, I just would not want to give him a max contract. All right, we have two more teams. The Houston Rockets, 41 wins last year, 44 over-under this year. They got rid of Dwight Howard. They brought in Ryan Anderson. They're going to play a fun they brought in Eric Gordon as well, a fun, fast-paced Mike D'Antoni style that should produce a lot of points on both ends of the court. Should be interesting, to say the least.
Yeah, I don't know who they play opening night, but I'm stacking the shit out of that game in all forms of daily fantasy sports. It is going to be insane. It's going to be like the Saints at the Super. It's going to be so incredible because even if they get down 15 or up 15 or whatever, they'll have the ability to get right back in it, or they'll have the ability to give up the lead because they have such bad defenders. Especially since Patrick Beverley is going to miss. He's out indefinitely with a knee injury. So now you might have Eric Gordon starting at point guard, and you went from having like three above average defenders in Beverley, Ariza, and Capella to two and three pretty big holes. I'm looking at Eric Gordon as an interesting guy on this team. Something that people have mentioned about Eric Gordon is the guy has just never played anywhere he's wanted to play. First, he got drafted to the biggest joke organization in league history, the Clippers, the Donald Sterling Clippers. And then he finally started to have an interesting run with the Clippers, where they had like a fun young team with him and Blake. And then as soon as that happens, he gets traded for Chris Paul to New Orleans. So he shows up in New Orleans. He doesn't want to be there. His rookie decision, because who wants to be in New Orleans? His rookie decision or his rookie contract is over. He begs them to let him go to Phoenix because he wanted to go to Phoenix. He signs a restricted free agency max offer sheet. Of course, the Pelicans match. Now he's back in New Orleans. He is openly discontent about being there. And so he spends the next 4 years playing and being injured, but not really with like chronic knee injuries, just like weird injuries, broken arm or something like that. Like some like strange problems, a kneecap issue. He had some weird things that he missed time for, a finger issue, I think it was last year, that don't really seem like he's not like a chronically injured guy, or he is a chronically injured guy, but he isn't chronically injured by the same thing. So to me, you might see a pretty good year, especially with Harden spacing the floor. Eric Gordon might shoot 52% from three this year. Don't be surprised if he shoots 52% from three. He might see great looks. So that would be a guy that I'm looking at as being interesting. And a guy that's better than you think is Clint Capella. And that pretty much wraps up my thoughts on the Rockets.
I would say with regards to Gordon, not only offensively, but he actually has some defensive potential as well. Like he's a pretty stocky, strong guy who, you know, now that he's going to be guarding point guard, well, I guess you have to guard, put Harden on the weak link no matter what. So that's going to hurt you defensively.
He has big wingspan too. That's, so yeah, I agree with you with the defensive tools, but he has never really put it together. So we'll see.
Yeah, like I wouldn't be shocked. Like I'm not saying this is likely, but it wouldn't be shocking to me if like a year from now we're talking about Eric Gordon as like the 30th best player in the NBA. Like I think he has that kind of upside in the situation.
I mean, we were talking about it 4 years ago when he was a young, exciting 22-year-old, right? And then just like injuries derailed it or whatever. So yeah, I'm on board with that. I mean, I think it's very unlikely, but maybe point guard is the position he's destined to guard. Maybe him playing point guard next to James Harden and guarding point guards is just what he needed offensively or defensively. Maybe he just is better suited to guard point guards and he never got a chance to do that in New Orleans. That's unlikely, but who knows? Maybe. Also, he might be better suited to guard like power or small forwards too. He is very stocky with a low center of gravity. So maybe he just kind of finds the right defensive assignment. And he looks a little better than he really is. And on offense, he is going to have all the secondary and tertiary creating and all the wide open threes he wants.
Yeah. I would say I'm buying on the Rockets in general. I know we'll get to our predictions in a second after we go through the last team, but I would say 44 wins, I would take the over on that. I like them.
I agree. I'm buying too.
All right, last team for us, New Orleans. 30 wins last year, 37 this year. Coming into last year, I thought Anthony Davis was going to take the next step into that, you know, LeBron territory where he might be, you know, best player in the league type level. He did not. Unfortunately, it was due to a lot of injuries, and unfortunately, he's already experiencing these injuries again. I think he has an ankle issue or something in preseason. Give me some thoughts on New Orleans.
The strange and slightly concerning thing about Anthony Davis is that he keeps getting different injuries. On one hand, that's good, I guess. But on the other hand, it's just like, man, the Pelicans training staff is supposed to be legendarily bad. I think that they use the same training staff the Saints do or something like that. And apparently both of them are bad. They're just like, they're just bad for both teams. They're just like, oh, I know we can cut costs and just use the same training staff that's already failing with our football team for our basketball team and have it also fail. So I don't know if that's supposed to be their strategy, but they're just kind of not that interesting to me. I mean, they're interesting in the sense of, yes, Anthony Davis should be amazing this year when healthy. And they're interesting in the sense of you literally cannot have worse health problems than they had last year. Last year, people were picking the over because they wanted to pick Anthony Davis to take a leap and be an MVP candidate. And they didn't realize that at the start of the season, only 8 of their 15 rostered players were healthy. That was at the start of last season. So now this year it should be a little more interesting in the sense that Drew Holiday is away from the team because his wife just had like a brain tumor and gave birth and all this crazy stuff. But otherwise they're healthy. I like their offseason. I think Solomon Hill's good. I think Etuan Moore is good. And I think Langston Galloway's good. And it just ended up that they've got kind of a lot of depth and guys that aren't great offensive players but are solid two-way players. They might lack a little bit of creation without Drew, but I like him, you know? I mean, I like him as like an average team. unfortunately, with like the Ashik contract and just Anthony Davis's generally injury problems, I think that what you're going to see is a team with like a relatively low upside. I didn't love their draft. I thought Hield sucks. I think they should have gone for Jamal Murray instead of Hield. A little more upside. Yeah, I just, this team is uninteresting. They'll grind out some wins. They'll play better defense probably than they did last year because you can't play much worse defense than they did last year. And I would buy their stock if only because last year everyone was buying them too much and they didn't realize how injured they were. This year they're a little more healthy, and I think those three players I mentioned are all better kind of players on the margins as far as the rotation goes. So I would expect a bounce back year, but a bounce back year is the 7 seed in 40 wins.
Okay, let's conclude like we did in the Eastern Conference with a few random predictions and stuff. Give me one over-under that you would like to bet on in the Western Conference, if you could, and give me one gutsy prediction about the Western Conference.
Sure. I'm going to bet the over for the Jazz. I think low 50s. The over-under is 49. I think low 50s. You can't deter them. They can withstand injuries because their depth is incredible, and they might have problems in the playoffs, but when it comes to night-to-night basis of bringing it, it'll be them. They're going to play tremendous defense every night. So I would pick them. Bold prediction would be
I'm going to predict Portland to no, that's too bold. I'm not that bold. I'm going to say that that's also not bold. I was going to say Rudy Gay, maybe not starting the year.
I'm thinking as you're thinking, and I can't really think of anything super.
Yeah, it's tough. I see. I mean, I would just sum it up by saying if it's not bold, then it's predictable. I think it's a little predictable.
If I had to cop out, I would say like a bold prediction. I would take Golden State to beat last year's win total, 73 wins, just because I want to be like on board Golden State.
Yeah, but I mean, I just know that their mentality is that it took too much out of them. It's been reported so many times. I've heard Kerr on a few podcasts talk about it. They just think that was too mentally draining on them, and they're not going to try to do it again. So I think if they get close, if they're like 60-7 or something like that, I think at that point in time, assuming they're obviously going to have the one seed locked up because it's unlikely the Spurs will be as good as last year, I think at that point in time, Kerr will start like never playing Steph and Durant on back-to-backs. He might even start just like openly tanking games by like resting Zaza Pachulia and starting Anderson Varejão, because deep down he probably knows that Anderson Varejão promotes losing games. So I don't think you'll see that from them. I would probably say this they shake out as follows. Golden State, tier of their own. Tier two to me is Clippers, Spurs, and Jazz all in the same tier. I would expect the Spurs to win the most regular season games, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Clippers tried really hard to get the two seed because, you know, just they kind of understand how important home court is in a match like that. So those teams could push each other. The bottom rung playoff teams, you know, to me, Portland is in. I almost wanted to predict them out. I can't do it. Portland's in. Just like even – I mean, I guess an injury to Dame would do it because their backup point guard situation is a little weak. But the depth on the wing, even an injury to Dame wouldn't do it. It just the depth they have is strong. They go three or four deep at the big man position with Azeeley when he's healthy, Plumlee, Myers, Leonard, Ed Day. They have so much depth all over the place. So I would say Portland's a safe bet for the 5-6 seed. I guess bold call, Denver makes the playoffs. Denver sneaks in at the 8th seed. How about that?
I mean, I think that's really bold. I think there's no way. I'm pretty high on Houston, like I said. I would disagree with you on Portland. I think Dame is integral to their hopes. I think if he's out, they are not making the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably right. But if he misses 30 games, they could still make it.
Sure. I just think the West is tough, man.
Yeah, it is. So yeah, I would say Houston and Portland are clearly in that next tier. I would assume you would agree for 5 and 6.
I might say Minnesota's with them.
Woohoo!
Towns, man. Towns, man. Maybe I was a year too soon. I'm saying the same things about Towns this year as I was about Brow last year. But I feel like injuries just killed that. And Towns has a better feel for the game and things.
The one thing I'm worried about is Towns playing 4. Look for that to depress his fantasy value as well. I think he's just going to play a little bit too much for my liking, and it's too bad. I would have rather, instead of them – I mean, I like Cole Aldrich, though. I'm not too unhappy about that. But instead of them signing Cole Aldrich, I would have rather them sign, like, Luol Deng or somebody like that. They could play power forward next to Towns at center or something instead.
All right, cool. Any closing thoughts on the Western Conference or anything you would like to leave the viewers with?
Nope. I am AE Jones Lego, LEGEGO on my social media, Instagram, Twitter, etc.
I noticed you on Instagram now, by the way. That's big news.
I don't know. I just decided I had too cool of a life to not be on Instagram.
Gotcha. All right, cool, man. Thanks again for doing this. And, we'll talk to you soon.